Foul Play, a murder game played by people whose business is murder. And here to see Foul Play is your chairman, Simon Brett.
Hello and welcome to another murder mystery in which a crime will be committed and solved within half an hour. And to solve this week's mystery, I am joined, as ever, by two eminent professional crime writers. Peter Walker is an ex-policeman, so this week's suspects had better watch out. He's also an incredibly prolific novelist, and under the name of Nicholas Rear, wrote the books on which the ITV series Heartbeat is based. So, Peter, would you say it's fair if I describe you as more popular than Coronation Street?
Very fair, Simon, yes, indeed.
Right. Peter's co-investigator is Paula Gosling. She was born in Detroit and has the rare distinction of having had her first novel made into a film starring Sylvester Stallone. Paula, did you recognise anything of your book in the movie?
I recognised one name and two chapters, and the rest was a mystery.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guest investigators. And once again this week, to provide all the characters who people our mystery, will you welcome the usual suspects, Lee Simpson and Maria McCurlin. Enough introductions. It's time for a crime. As we listen to Maria read the opening of this week's mystery, The Widow's Last Cruise.
The cruise ship Eleanor of Aquitaine steamed expensively through the Mediterranean. Its passenger list included the titled, the eminent, and a few guests who were not quite the thing but had money. Mrs. Stella Preedy fitted firmly into the last category. Her money had come from a judicious marriage to Albert Preedy, the munitions king who'd made such a killing, in every sense of the word, during the Great War. He'd popped his expensive clogs in 1935, leaving his widow the seemingly hopeless task of spending all the money that he left her. She had faced the challenge gamely, moving relentlessly from the Riviera to Switzerland, from cruise ship to cruise ship, bejeweled like a Christmas tree, and leaving always behind her the faint aroma of disapproval. This arose from people of breeding who recognised that she had none, and people of money who recognised that she had more. Of their censure, Mrs. Preedy was always blithely unaware, but not so unaware as she was when the Eleanor of Aquitaine docked in the harbour of Alexandria. Because then, Stella Preedy lay still on the chaise longue of her stateroom, her face livid and immobile. She had been strangled with her own expensive pearls.
Well, it seems like we're back in the so-called golden age of the detective story, at least in period, if not in plot. Peter and Paula... Gosh, you sound a bit like a 60s pop group, don't you? Paula and Peter, early days, I know, but any thoughts so far?
I'm surprised that anybody could be strangled with a string of pearls. You'd think the string would snap.
Yes, I think they had some very strong kind of thread in those days.
It Big
was well string. Known. It was marketed in 1935
right.
as Horniman's faultless thread.
Remember it well.
Yes. Peter?
Completely open mind at the moment.
I think that's probably the best way. They do say that if you keep an open mind, people will throw all kinds of rubbish into it.
Absolutely.
Well, you do have very little to go on at the moment. It's time we had a bit more information. Because of its geographical location, the murder comes under the jurisdiction of the Alexandrian police. The officer in charge of the case, Inspector Nasser Mohammed, has agreed to bring us up to date with his investigations. Inspector Mohammed.
Well, Mrs. Stella Preedy was found in a stateroom at 5:30 p.m. by her niece and companion, Miss Marigold Fortescue. Miss Fortescue had last seen her aunt alive at lunchtime, when they had both dined at the table of the ship's captain, Captain Benson. Also in their company had been another passenger, the musical comedian Mr. Harry Faherty. Apart from the marks of strangulation, there were no injuries to Mrs. Preedy, nor was anything disturbed in her stateroom. None of Mrs. Preedy's jewellery or other valuables were missing. This suggests to me that she was not surprised by her killer, and may actually have invited him or her into the room. I have talked to the various other passengers, asking if they saw anything untoward. I even asked a small Belgian gentleman with a curled moustache But he said he was unable to help, as his character was still in copyright. We don't need him, anyway. I have my own theory about the crime. Mrs. Priddy was a rich woman, so we ask ourselves, who profits from her death? Find that person, and you've found your murderer.
Well, thank you very much, Inspector. I suppose that is quite a reasonable solution, and at least we now have some potential suspects. Peter and Paula, do any of those names sound suspicious to you?
Well, to me, they all sound extremely suspicious, actually. Mm. And I think, as a policeman, you will have each and every one in for a lengthy questioning.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and also, as the captain said, qui bono, who benefits?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm. Right. Well, what you ask, Peter, is actually shortly to happen, because we're going to hear from some of the people who were actually on the Eleanor of Aquitaine. And the first statement we hear comes from the captain of the Eleanor of Aquitaine, Captain Frederick Benson.
Bit of a diner, isn't it? Murder. Obviously, I've had a few deaths on board since I've been with the Eleanor, only to be expected, given the average age of the clientele. But this is the first murder. Oh, no, tell a lie. I did have a bit of a dust-up with a couple of stokers off the Azores a few years back. One beaned the other with a coal shovel. Well, they're working class, so it didn't really count. Mrs. Preedy's class, well, wouldn't really be the thing to discuss that. I don't want to speak ill of the dead, do we? I mean, given the work I do, I'm used to mixing with the creme de la creme, British peerage, and a good few of the crowned heads of Europe, but it's certainly not my job to make those of inferior upbringing feel awkward. Crew's company needs the old shekels, eh? Wherever they come from. After lunch, I was busy working. We make it all look effortless, but there's a lot of hard graft goes into running a tub like this. I can't give you an exact itinerary for the afternoon. I was all over the boat. Well, I'm not one to spread rumours, but I'd have thought with any murder, you look to the prophet motive. Miss Fortescue was the old girl's niece, constantly referred to by the victim as my only living relative. Have to wait and see till the will's published, but, well, also has to be said, Mrs. Preedy's treated Miss Fortescue like a used chamois leather. Still, never one to cast aspersions. Say no more, eh?
All right, well, thank you very much, Captain Benson. If you'll be kind enough to just wait there for a moment, I'm sure our guest investigators would like to ask you a few questions. Peter, remembering the interrogation skills you developed during your career in the police, maybe you would like to put the first question to Captain Benson.
Good evening, Captain.
Good evening. How are you doing, old fellow?
You were working after lunch, I'm told, on the day of the murder.
Yes, absolutely, all over the boat. I tell you, it takes some working on
this. What does that entail exactly? Can it be more precise?
Well, as a captain, one is responsible for absolutely everything.
Don't
but it also means that one does absolutely nothing.
The lady in question, I understand that she was at the captain's table at one point.
She was, yes.
Yes. When was that?
That was lunchtime on the sad day of her death.
Lunchtime. And how was she on that occasion?
Oh, she seemed fine. A little brusque in her manner, but I put that down to her lack of breeding. But there you are.
And was she accompanied by anyone?
Well, she was accompanied by Miss Fortescue, who tended to accompany her most places she went about the ship, from what I saw.
And there were no gentlemen hovering at the time?
No gentlemen that I could see, no, nor could I foresee any gentlemen hovering around. She was not the sort of lady around which gentlemen might hover. Mm. Were they moths, her light was not that bright, shall we say.
Captain, how many people are at the captain's table?
At the captain's table? Not many. In fact, there are only four, including the captain.
So who was the other one?
The other one was the music hall comedian, Mr. Harry Fairhattie.
Oh, I see. And was the conversation lively that afternoon?
Wherever Mr. Fairhattie is, the conversation is lively in one way or another. Have you met him yet?
No, we haven't.
Well, you have something of a treat in store for you, let me tell you.
Well, were you under the impression that he might have met the victim before?
No, I didn't. In fact, I have to say, I got the impression they didn't get on very well at all. There seemed to be quite a lot of antagonism between them.
I see. Thank you.
Not at all.
We will move on to our second statement, which was given by Stella Preedy's niece and companion, Miss Marigold Fortescue.
Auntie Stella was always a tremendous influence on my life. No, you see, from a little child, I benefited from Auntie Stella's generosity. My mother was her sister, and when both my parents died young, Auntie Stella paid for me to have the best education available. So I do owe her an enormous amount. Yes, she was sometimes a little bit rude to me. But then one has to make allowances. She'd lost her husband. She was getting older. And then she had all that money to look after. It can't have been easy for her. Well, yes, She did sometimes shout at me in company, but you know, there was this young man, one of the passengers, called Richard. I liked him very much. We started meeting in the ship's ballrooms in the evenings to dance and, well, Stella forbade me from seeing him. I'm sure she had my best interests at heart. No, I've no idea what's in her will. I'm not expecting anything. Auntie Stella was so generous to me while she was alive. After lunch on the day of her death, well, yes, I went to my room and got on with my needlework. I'm embroidering a set of hassocks for my local church back in England. Yes, I'm in a cabin adjacent to Auntie Stella's stateroom, and there is an interconnecting door. But no, I stayed in my room until one of the stewards came and told me what had happened to Auntie. Well, it's strange. During the afternoon, I did think I heard a conversation coming from the stateroom. There was Auntie's voice and a man's voice. I thought a sort of rather common voice, perhaps northern. But it was probably just my imagination. It's terribly vivid.
Yes, well, of course, young girls do have particularly vivid and fertile imaginations, don't they? If I could just ask you to stay there for a moment, Miss Fortescue.
Yes.
I think there may be some follow-up questions. Paula, what would you like to ask the witness?
You say you heard a conversation next door.
I believe I did, yes.
And you thought it was a man's voice?
Yes.
And was it an angry conversation?
No, you see, I'm afraid I do tend to daydream quite a lot when I'm embroidering my hassocks. It could have been a man, it could have been a woman, I'm really not sure. It just sounded slightly northern to me.
Slightly northern?
Yes, but then I could have been just hearing my aunt in stereo.
Why did your aunt take against young Richard?
I think possibly she was frightened that I would leave her.
But now that your aunt is gone, won't you be able to marry Richard?
I fear Richard now has been taken by someone else. I'm afraid on cruises of this type, really, gentlemen callers only call a certain amount of time before they get bored, and I believe he's been seen at the Purple Pussycat.
Marigold, how would you describe yourself physically? Are you a big girl or a small girl?
I fear you're the best person to judge that, sir.
Obviously, your aunt thought a lot about you, and did you help your aunt with her money then, with her finances?
No, my aunt really never wanted me to know anything about her financial affairs.
Didn't you feel that she was not trusting you fully then by not giving you access to everything?
It was none of my business. My aunt was perfectly generous to me.
Did she meet Richard then?
She did.
Did you introduce them, or did she catch you?
She caught us.
She caught you?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Okay. Right.
We weren't doing anything untoward. We were merely dancing.
Now, you actually found your aunt, I believe.
I found my aunt, yes.
I'm interested in the pearls around the neck.
Yes.
Were they her pearls?
They were her pearls, yes.
And had you seen them before?
Yes, oh yes, she wore them often.
They're quite a regular part of her her jewellery, were they?
Yes.
I see.
Right, well, thank you very much indeed, Miss Fortescue. I'm deeply moved. We now move on to our third statement, which was given by the retired music hall comedian, Mr. Harry Fairty.
Hey, not so much of the retired. You make me feel like the Scotsman who was asked, is anything worn under the kilt? No, he replied, it's all in perfect working order. I'm certainly not retired. Going back to England to make a new series of me radio show for the BBC called Fairty Middling. Yes, well, I come on a cruise because I made a few bob. Not always like that. Oh, no. When I was growing up in Muckingham, we were so poor, me mum used to send me down to the butcher's every Monday to buy a sheep's head and leave the eyes in, I had to say, so it can see us through the week. No, I never met any of the people on this cruise before I boarded the ship. I'm on my own. I was married, but it didn't work out for me. Too fastidious. I was fast, she was hideous. Hey! Oh, blimey! Afternoon, Mrs. Preedy died. Where was I? Let me think. I'd had lunch at the captain's table. Then, after lunch, I went into the smoking room with a box of cigars and a bottle of whiskey. I had a few drinks, and then I guess I dozed off. Next thing I know, there's all this commotion with people shouting that Mrs. Preedy's being murdered. No. And that's a terrible thing. Doesn't do to joke about something like that. I mean, the death of a woman of that age. It's a tragedy, isn't it? Unless she happens to be your mother-in-law.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fairty. I think it's quite possible that our guest investigators might want to feed you some further questions. Peter, do you have anything to ask Harry Fairty?
You dozed off, I understand.
Oh, yes, a little bit too much of the old Scotch nectar.
Where?
I put it in my mouth. Sorry. In the smoking room. They have a smoking room on the ship, and that's where I dozed off.
Now, had you met Mrs. Preedy prior to the captain's table?
I met her at the captain's table. Never clapped eyes on her before in my life.
Mr. Fairty, were you alone in the smoking room?
I believe I was, yes. Though I cannot vouch for the time when I was asleep. People may have crept in, done all sorts of things, and crept out before I woke up again.
I understand that at the captain's table you were rather cheery.
Well, I like to be cheery. That's my job. I'm a professional mirth maker. Oh, yes.
Have you always been a professional comedian?
Oh, well, no, not all the time. I started off in show business in a dancing troupe with me mum and me dad called Fairty, Fairty and Fairty. But it was a very difficult thing to say, so people wouldn't buy many tickets, because they'd come in and go, I'd like a ticket for Fairty. Give us a ticket for the Jones Brothers and bugger it, you see? That's what they do, you see? So the dance group broke up pretty early and I turned to comedy.
Thank you.
Sure.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Fairty. Well, guest investigators, has the new information brought you any nearer to a solution of this appalling crime? Where's your finger pointing at the moment, Peter?
My finger is pointing at the moment to Marigold. I would like to think that possibly she sees herself marrying Richard, and the only person in her way, of course, is Aunt Stella.
Right. Paula, where are your suspicions?
My suspicions are that she is too obvious. On the other hand, the only alternatives I have is a loudmouth and a snob.
Yep.
Neither of whom seem to have any connection with the victim whatsoever. Right. They both deny having known her before this cruise.
Well, you've offered some fascinating possibilities. And who knows, there might be the odd grain of truth in what you say. Still, we'll soon know more, because the next thing we're going to do... Excuse me, a camel's just arrived. And leaping down from its back is a small Egyptian boy.
Effendi, Effendi!
Who speaks Turkish. And who has in his hand a cleft stick with a message in it.
This is from Inspector Mohammed for Mr. Brett.
Ah, thank you very much. Well, the message is that Inspector Mohammed has come up with some new evidence. So without more ado, we'll go straight over to the inspector.
I would like to report that we have cabled to Muckingham, England, the solicitor of the late Mrs. Preedy, and found out that she did indeed leave all her immense fortune to her niece, Miss Marigold Fortescue. And we have had a statement from a belly dancer, who works in one of our hot Alexandrian night spots, the Purple Pussycat, and whose name is... Fatima.
On the evening after the Eleanor of Aquitaine docked into the Purple Pussycat, came two Englishmen who are, how you say, quite a bit tiddlywink. One, he is wearing captain's uniform, the other thick tweed suit and big moustache. From photo, I pick them out as Captain Benson and Mr. Harry Fahati. They give me much money if I dance close to their table. I dance close. And I hear say the fat one, Mr. Fahiti, it's an ill wind, as the bishop said to the actress, after a plate of beans. Then he laugh like, hey-hey, ho-ho. Then he say, now the old girl's gone, there are a few good secrets that need never come to light, eh? Okay. Enough.
The other thing we find in searching the late Mrs. Pretty State room is this typewritten note, which reads, I know your secret, and there are a lot of important people who would also like to know it.
Thank you very much, Inspector Mohammed. Well, Peter and Paula, quite a lot of new thoughts to chew on there. Do any of them change the direction in which your suspicions were moving?
There's an interesting correlation. And I have a note here that Mr. Fairty comes from Buckingham. And that Miss Preedy's solicitor is in Buckingham. Mr. Fairty very possibly knows this lady very, very, very well. Mm-hmm. And is lying in his little northern teeth about not having met her before. Hence the antagonism, which seemed to have no source.
Mm. Well, maybe you can get a bit closer to the truth by further cross-examination. You may now call back each of the witnesses. Paula, who would you like to summon back to the stand first?
Well, he frightens me half to death, but I think Mr. Fairty.
Mr. Fairty.
Mr. Faraday, you come from Buckingham.
I certainly do. I'm proud of it. It's a fine town.
And so does Mrs. Preedy, or so did Mrs. Preedy, the late
Mrs.
Preedy. Oh,
she? Well, that's news to me.
Is it indeed?
Oh, yes.
And is it possible that you might have known her a little better than the average person might have known her?
Are you implying, you cheeky thing, that we had a bit of kissing and cuddling on the poop deck?
Well, I'm implying that you might have been married to her.
Good Lord, no. Married to that? Ho, ho. Tie me to the railway lines at rush hour at Paddington, rather, I would say. Ho, no.
Peter, do you... I understand, Mr. Faraday, that you and the captain do have some kind of friendship.
Oh, I know what you're referring to. Our evening of belly dancing delight at the Purple Pussycat.
Tell me about it.
Oh, yes. Well, you see, the thing was, I'd had a few whiskies that afternoon, and I think he'd knocked back a few as a bit of a reaction to the old murder. Yes, drink and tragedy make strange bedfellows. Though not literally bedfellows, you understand, because I'm northern and we don't do that sort of thing.
Not up north, we don't, no.
As you know!
I think, thank you very much, Mr. Faraday.
Thank you.
Who would you like to call to the stand next?
Have another word with Marigold.
Yes, Miss Fortescue, if you would be so kind.
Marigold, we know that your mother was Mrs. Preedy's sister.
That's right.
Who was your father?
I never knew my father, I'm afraid.
Why not?
He died when I was two. I have no recollection of him at all. I believe in my daydreams that he was a count.
Your aunt, Marigold, she... one of the things she did for you was to give you a good education, the best education, in fact, you said.
That's right, yes.
Where was that?
I had private tutors for a while, and then I went to Rodine.
Right, well, thank you very much indeed, Miss Fortescue. Would you like to speak to the captain again?
Hello.
Information has reached us that, in fact, you went off the boat that afternoon.
Well, later on, really, rather later than the afternoon. I did actually end up in the Purple Pussycat with...
Well, you never told us that to start with, did you?
No, I didn't. Well, I'm not proud of it, you know. Captain hanging around in belly dancing parlours, it's not the done thing, really.
You knew then, at that stage, of course, that Mrs. Preedy was dead.
Well, it was partly as a result of that, you see, after I found out. I was rather shocked, to be honest.
A strange place to go, would you think?
I'd taken a few medicinal brandies when I'd found the terrible news. And one thing led to another. I met Mr. Fairtier by the deck rail, and we set off into town. We didn't really know where we were going, but we did end up at the Purple Pussycat.
You didn't try and lose him, then, anywhere?
Well, several times, yes, but he stuck to me like a leech, and it's always easy to find Mr. Faraday, because you can just hear, ho-ho, from about 4 miles away.
Thank you. Yeah.
Captain, where do you live when you're not on the ship?
Plymouth.
In Plymouth?
Yes.
Thank you very much, not Captain Benson. Peter, you've had a lot of experience of the world of real crime. Well, sorry, that's not going to help you at all in this. who do you think strangled Stella Preedy?
I'm still favouring Marigold, actually.
Marigold.
I think that she perhaps had her eye on possibly the captain and that the aunt would stand in the way of that. So I think she killed the aunt to get her own way and to eventually marry perhaps the captain.
Right. Paula, do you go along with that?
I just keep thinking that there's a hidden relationship, and I think it's between Mr. Faraday and possibly Marigold. Possibly he's her father.
I see.
And it could have been Mr. Faraday's previous existence, and when he encountered the aunt, all was about to be revealed if he didn't kill her.
You would point the finger at Mr. Faraday?
Mr. Faraday, he has no corroboration for his alibi whatsoever, and there was no one else in the smoking room.
Right.
He says he was asleep, but who's going to believe that? I can't believe that man ever sleeps.
Right. Well, I have made a note of those conclusions, and soon we will know if either of you has hit upon the right solution, because it's time for this week's Foul Play, Foul Playlet. Yes, now we'll find out what really happened as we join the captain's table on the cruise ship Eleanor of Aquitaine.
And then, after that, I'm going to bury St. Edmunds. Somebody's got to. He's been dead for years. Ho, ho, ho!
Very amusing, Mr. Faraday.
You know, Mrs. Preedy, this is the first cruise we've had a comedian on board.
And, Captain, one can only hope it's the last. Marigold, me corsage is crew kid.
Oh dear, Auntie Stella, let me straighten it for you.
Hey, have you heard this one? My mother-in-law's always changing her mind. Trouble is, she never gets one that works any better. Ho-ho-ho!
Mr. Faraday, I'm surprised that you choose to tell stories which draw attention to your family background.
Well, I do hope you're all looking forward to the delights of Alexandria.
Certainly, Captain Benson. My Baedeker guide warns that the street markets are full of thieves. They advise that young ladies should Watch out for men trying to get their hands on their valuables.
And on their virtues, eh?
Mr. Fairty.
I must ask you to withdraw that remark. This is the captain's table, round which have sat princes and duchesses. It is not used to the language of the barrack room. Oh, sorry, Captain, it's difficult to change the way you were brought up.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. It is possible to rise above the tenements of Goose Market Street, you know.
Oh, but I wasn't brought up in Goose Market Street. It was just around the corner, in Cheesemaker's Lane.
The precise location is immaterial, Mr. Fairty. It doesn't change my point. It is possible to rise above one's background, even when that background's Muckingham. Many people have done so before. I mean, I weren't born to my current status, but would anyone ever guess that now, eh?
I'm sure no one would imagine that you had ever been other than the charming lady we now see before us, Mrs. Preedy.
Thank you, Captain. Marigold girl, what are you doing staring across room looking out for that gigolo of yours, eh?
No, Aunt, I...
You will be allowed to take an interest in young men when I say so, and not before. Now come along, you silly chit, and take me to the stateroom. It's time for me afternoon nap.
And another thing, Auntie Stella, I wish you'd stop humiliating me in front of people.
Oh, shut up, child. You're getting so much money out of me, I'll humiliate you whenever I feel like it.
No amount of money can compensate someone for being insulted.
No? Not even if I tell you you're going to inherit everything when I die.
What?
Aye, I thought that'd stop you in your tracks, young lady. Now go and get your embroidery. I want to sleep.
Very well, Auntie Stella. Sweet dreams.
What's going on? Hey, it's you. Ah, well, I can't say I'm surprised to see you. You got me note, did you? Well, it's true, I do know your secret. That's the thing about being a member of Lovable Working Class, isn't it? Everyone knows everyone else's secrets, don't they? A little secret like, say, the fact that the well-known, well-loved Harry Fairty, the one they think so highly of at BBC, that he went to prison in his 20s for stealing jewellery. Everyone round Goose Market Street and Cheesemaker Lane in Muckingham know about that. And working class people don't forget. Oh, no. However high and mighty someone might become, we remember how they used to be and all the naughty little things they did. We don't like people pretending to be what they're not. It was when I mentioned the tenements in Goose Market Street. You knew I was onto you, didn't you? Oh, don't think you can buy me off. I've more money than I'll ever need. No, the pleasures of blackmail are as nothing compared to the pleasure I'll get from showing you up in public for what you really are. It's just a matter of who I decide to break the glad news to first.
Really? That's what you think, is it? You'll never get the chance to break it to anyone.
Oh, no. Hey, it's nice to hear your proper accent again, by the way. Captain Benson, take your hands off me pearls. Don't you dare! Don't you bastard!
Well, there you have it, yet another casualty of the British class system. Well, Peter and Paula, you had three to choose from, and you each chose one, and neither of you chose the right one.
Totally wrong.
Congratulations.
I didn't even follow my own rules. That was terrible.
Was?
Yes.
Yes, my rules didn't work either.
No, mine did, though, didn't they?
Back to the typewriter.
Anyway, well done. So, another foul play has reached its denouement. My thanks go out to all the passengers and crew of the Eleanor of Aquitaine, better known as Lee Simpson and Maria McCurlin. Also to this week's splendid guest investigators, Peter Walker and Paula Gosling.
Foul Play was devised and written by the chairman, Simon Brett. The producer was Anne Jobson.